We have a cremation. Dr. Jack, would you mind taking it over again?
Okay, Ajahn Afterthought. Generally, and this is not always true, but generally among Buddhist groups, cremation is the preferred form of funeral or burial. The remains, the earthly remains, the ashes, remember, this is not the person. As I said earlier, if you take any particular organ or a limb, that's not the person. So the remains are not the person. But these remains are often, I'm going to use a word I'm not sure is quite accurate, they're often enshrined in a fence post. There'll be a fence around the wat, around the temple compound, and they will. A family will pay for a particular post. They're made out of bricks, and they've got a little house on them, and the remains will be put there. In some temples, in some wats, they will build a stupa, which is a conical structure or a spire-like structure. And at Wat Munasotaram, which is in Minnesota, they have built a huge stupa. And in there, they have placed the remains all around the walls, and they have a little plaque with the person's name, and the remains will stay there for some period of time. In some temples, they will have a kind of a side room where the remains are placed for 1 year, and they'll have a photograph, and people will light candles and burn incense and come and chant. So when you ask about the funeral process, there is the actual cremation and placing the remains in the urn and then turning it over to the family. Sometimes it's buried in the ground. Sometimes it's located at a temple. Sometimes, and this is quite common, they will have a family altar, and they'll have a shelf very up high, and they will have a statue of the Buddha there, and they will light incense, and underneath that they will have some sort of a table or a chest, and they will have the person's picture and the remains there.
Another thing I would add is when my father-in-law and my mother-in-law, they wished they wanted to go back to Laos, so my wife and I took the assets back to Laos, then and they prefer to go along the Mekong River, so it's their wish too. So we put the urn and the assets along the Mekong River, with the monk follow us and chanting, pray for the soul, live in peace. So that's the way they want. So another way is of cremation and burial too.
I have a question about Buddhism. Is nirvana affected by medical decisions at all? Reaching nirvana?
Okay. Well, I'm going to wax a little academic again and ask you to define what is nirvana.
Good question.
It's an excellent question. And you know, thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of treatises have been written about what nirvana is not. If we go back to the earliest Buddhist texts, both in the Theravada and the Mahayana tradition, nirvana is never outlined, it is never described, it is never stated, this is what is nirvana. By the way, nirvana is a Sanskrit word, and in our tradition we use the Pali language rather than Sanskrit, and we say nibbana. So if I start saying nibbana, it's the same as nirvana. So let me just give you a scenario, okay? Nibbana is that state or condition or way of being that is free from dukkha And remember I said dukkha is often translated as suffering, but it means dissatisfactoriness, disillusionment. It's all of those states that are less than ideal, less than perfect, less than what you would want them to be. So can medical interventions affect nibbana? I don't think anybody can answer that question. But I would suggest you go pursue a doctorate in Buddhist studies at Harvard or someplace like that. And when you get the answer, use that for your doctoral dissertation. Nibbana is not a place. It is an extinction. It is a blowing out. It is a ceasing to be. So in that sense, if medical interventions prolong our lives, then yeah, it can affect nibbana in that it postpones it. But I can't imagine anyone who would say that, you know, a heart transplant would have any effect on whether one attains nibbana or not.
Yeah, it's a state of place that we cannot even explain at all. It's very broad.
Yeah, there's hundreds of thousands of treatises that have been written about something that cannot be written about.
Cannot be written.
Thank you.
Is there one more question? No? Way in the back.
This was for the Orthodox. You mentioned that previous to birth, we come from an eternal void, and then after the birth, we go back into that eternity. Maybe void wasn't the right word. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if the same soul can be born multiple times, like reincarnation, or is it you only have one life?
Yeah, it's like uniqueness. So it means that you are born to the certain, through the birth, to the life, and you live this eternal, earthly life that you were a very unique, completely unique person. So your soul is also in a way unique, but it goes to the eternity. This is also something in how we see that eternity after the death, because we are talking about hell and paradise, and this would be a good comparison with what was said in a Buddhist way of explanation of nirvana. So if we can in a way compare, so the paradise would be like nirvana and hell would be like dukkha. So it means paradise.
I'm not going to argue. Okay.
So actually the paradise and the hell in eternity after the death are not the places, they are conditions of that soul. So it's like the paradise means that wonderful, peaceful, good condition of the soul. The hell means that destruction and painful in a way, negative condition of the soul. So we are talking about conditions in that eternity. We are not talking about the places. And everyone is unique in that way. The same like when we are talking about that gene or genome, which is unique for every single person. The same is with our personalities and with the condition of our soul.
Dr. Knepper has a question.
I'm curious how suicide, and particularly in this context, physician-assisted suicide, affects one's ability to have a proper burial within your traditions. Does it disqualify you, or are you still able to receive a proper Muslim, Orthodox, Buddhist burial?
Mm-hmm. You mean in Orthodox Church?
For all of you, yeah.
Okay.
No, for us as Muslim, what he did, we consider it as he commit a sin, but that not meaning I'm not pray for him. No, I'm praying. I would pray for on him, and I will do a funeral. Everything's okay. He's not exit the religion. No, he just make a crime. You know, our scholars said it's better, but it's not must. It's better for the spiritual leader not to pray in him, kind of punishment for those who. For this person, so other people cannot copy him, so or do like him. So that's what we believe. But he still and we have some people, I hear about some a person or so, we do it. We go, this is a sin. It's not something, you know, yes, he's a choice and everything, but as I said before, we not, in Islam, it's forbidden to commit a suicide, you know, just that's why it's a test from God, and you need to be patient. Just like she mentioned the story about this guy who was sick for 18 years, so maybe he will be cured after this sickness, who knows? You know, God is the one who created you, he knows what's better for you, so that's why I said be patient with your test, you know, that's why you can take the reward of God. So if somebody come to me, still I will pray for him, still Brother Jamal, not me, he will go to wash his body, you know, so, and he will do everything for him.
And there has been, you know, times where we, I don't remember that many situations, but I think maybe once or twice, maybe, we washed the body up. You know, we explained to them just like we would anybody else, and we washed the body up, and we prepared the body to be buried. Yeah, that's what we, you know, because that's part of what we're supposed to do, and it's not our job to more or less judge what has happened, what that person did, but it's our job to make it easy for the family, try to help the family as much as we can, so we try to do, you know, do all those things, repairing the body and everything.
Well, in our tradition and the teaching is that you have a free choice, and if you make a choice to kill yourself, this is against all the teachings that you are getting from your church. But it's your free choice. If you do that, the circumstances are as they are. If you do that consciously, that's your choice. There are prayers for the family who remained, for whoever want to pray. But it is considered as it's not in accordance with the teaching. Of course, there is again circumstances where people do that not really because they want to terminate their life. They do that in some kind of a very stressful, very difficult situation like that. So that is also taken in consideration. And in that way, if it's, we are talking very much about medical stuff and like that, in that way, the opinion of the medical staff can help in that way, because if it's done not with a completely clear conscience and with the say, I want to do this, then it's a different, it's not the same level.
การฆ่าตัวตายทั้งพุทธศาสนาของเขาถือว่าเป็นบาป
Regarding our Buddhist teaching, if you commit suicide, that is your sin.
เพราะมันจะเป็นเหตุเป็นปัจจัยให้เขาเกิดมาครั้งใหม่ก็จะต้องฆ่าตัวตายอีก
If a person who died already, he reborn again, he might kill himself again. He might suicide again.
เพราะว่าพุทธศาสนาพระพุทธเจ้าของเขาสอนทุกอย่างเกิดเพราะเหตุมีเหตุมีปัจจัยให้เกิดถ้าจะเป็นคนดีมันก็ต้องมีเหตุมีปัจจัยถ้าเขาเป็นคนดีได
้ Regarding our Buddhist teaching that any organism or human being when is born okay regarding his good deed then he come to the good place
เพราะฉะนั้นชีวิตจริงของเฮานี่มันเป็นไปตามเหตุตามปัจจัยบ่แม่นเหตุบังเอิญเพราะว่ามีเหตุมีปัจจัยมาทั้งนั้นจะเป็นคนดีหรือคนบ่ดีก็มีเหตุมีปัจจัยมาแต่เมื่อก่อนคือการกระทําของเฮานั่นเอง
The life we come back okay to this world it had its own reason bad or good it always come back
เพราะว่าการกระทําของเฮานี่สําคัญที่สุด
The way we conduct ourselves each day, a good deed is very important.
ถ้าเฮาเป็นคนที่ใจบ่ดีก็เป็นเหตุเป็นปัจจัยให้เฮาใจบ่ดีอีกต่อไปในมื้อหน้า
If we not happy with ourselves, it lead to the way we have to do unhappy stuff.
เพราะว่าทุกอย่างบ่แม่นเหตุบังเอิญมันเหตุเพราะปัจจัยที่การกระทําของเฮาในชีวิตประจําวันของเฮาทั้งนั้น
Everything happen is in our heart all talk about our mind That's all
Yeah,
One of the things to be understood about the many different forms of Buddhism, there is no required belief. There is no doctrine that you have to accept. Again, it's an individual's understanding, their knowledge, their circumstances in life. Now, all Theravada, again, we have different branches of Buddhism, and Theravada would be sort of considered the orthopractic, the orthodox side, if you will. Orthodox meaning right belief, and this is right practice. But there is a fundamental set of principles that are considered the basis for all, the beginning of all Buddhist ethics, and it's called the Panchasila, the five virtuous precepts, the five moral precepts. And the very first of those is refrain from taking life. Refrain from taking life. It's not a thou shalt not. It is use your intelligence, use your will, use your everyday being, and don't take life. Don't take any life. So suicide is taking a life. While it is not strictly proscribed in the Buddhist doctrine, it is certainly frowned upon. Because as Ajahn was pointing out, what you do influences your next birth, your rebirth. And it's called the law of karma. And you know, it's you do good things, and the consequences of those will be good, and they'll be good for you as well as good for the rest of the world. So taking life is never right, morally right. But there are times, you know, you're walking down the street and you step on a bug and you don't even know it. You may do things that are self-destructive and you're not aware of it. You're not aware that your behavior is taking you down that path, down that road. So no Buddhist is ever going to recommend suicide because you refrain from taking life. But it's understandable. We try to have correct knowledge about why this person would want to do that or did do that. Sometimes suicides are unintentional. And so we need to take into account what was that person's intention. You know, the person that sees a kid kick a ball and the kid runs out into the street to get the ball and there's a bus coming and the person runs out and pushes the kid aside and gets hit by the bus and dies. Was that a suicide? Was that their intention? Well, they took steps, they did things that resulted in their own death. So, you know, the soldier that throws himself on a hand grenade, is he committing suicide? It seems like an easy question, Dr. Knepper, but we could go on for hours about this. But the five moral precepts, I'll just run through them quickly. Refrain from taking life. Refrain from taking that which is not given or offered to you. Refrain from sexual misconduct. Refrain from saying those things you do not know to be true. Yeah, if we could only get the politician. No, I don't want to go there. And the last one is refrain from sexual misconduct. No. Refrain from intoxicants. Yes, thank you. Did I leave out sexual misconduct? No, I said that one. Refrain from intoxicants. Because remember, Buddhist practice requires a clear mind in order to see things correctly. So refrain from intoxication. But yeah, suicides, it's a no-no.
Yes.
I said a lot.
That's true. Thank you. So as we kind of come to the end of our evening tonight, I want to invite you to join with me in wholeheartedly thanking our planners, our sponsors, our hosts, and particularly our panelists. So. Special thanks to all of you for your participation in the dialogue, and I just ask these two folks if there's any announcements that you want to make about future events or anything that we should say for the good of the order before we close the evening.
No. Thanks to Tangerine for the catering. Please go eat the food.
Okay, I mean, you think, you want to take his bag?
I'll let Adjan take the bag.
Yeah, we'll come back tomorrow. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
So, one of the points of my question, for one who committed suicide, this is a suicide.
I don't. I just, Tim referred to him as Jack. That's all I know.